evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, May 5th, 2017. UN peacekeepers prevent an attack on civilians in Leer County.
Our temporary operating base in Leer came under small arms attack from the direction of the government-held town of Leer, which lies on the southern side of the TOB.
And a new survey in Juba says residents think security is improving.
Gun violence went down, night robbery reduced, weapons were collected from civilians and unauthorized soldiers. They also said criminals were apprehended, and then they said security forces were polite and that security forces treated civilians with respect.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan, known as ANMIS, says peacekeepers from Ghana repelled a group of armed men who were planning to attack UNMIS temporary base in Leer County. ANMIS says the attackers came from the direction of a nearby government-held area. The head of ANMIS praised the quick response of the Ghanaian forces for repelling the attack, which he said could have resulted in many civilian casualties. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
UNMIS deputy spokesperson Santal Passat says peacekeepers from the Ghanaian contingent deployed in Leer opened fire on the gunmen late Wednesday night.
Between the hours of 11 and midnight, our temporary operating base in Leer came under small arms attack from the direction of the government-held town of Leer, which lies on the southern side of the TOB.
It's the first reported case of UN peacekeepers deterring an attack on civilians in South Sudan. UNMIS operates under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter, which states that 12,000 UN troops shall take action and enforce the peace where there is an imminent threat. Passat says this week's attempted attack on the government-controlled town of Leer could have had devastating effects on the 1,300 internally displaced persons seeking protection at the UNMIS base in Leer. Several aid agencies are operating at the temporary UN base. UNMIS says the identity of the attackers is not known, but the deputy UNMIS spokesperson says they came from the direction of a nearby government-held area. Famine was declared in Leer and Mayendit counties in February, a situation the UN calls totally man-made. SPLMIO deputy military spokesperson Colonel Paul Lam Gabriel denies their forces launched any attack on the UNMIS base. He says government forces attacked their base in Leer and a fierce fighting ensued.
The government launched an attack, went violent, and they decided to attack our base. So we had a fight. We clashed with them, but we do not know if they are the ones who went to attack, because our forces don't attack really the UN base. Because we know UN base or the UNMIS, they protect civilians in government control area. So there is no way we can attack the UNMIS. We can't do that.
But South Sudan Army Deputy Spokesman Colonel Santo Domich told the South Sudan in Focus the attackers might be rebels.
The guerrilla movement can use any direction. It can come from any direction, whether from the direction where the SPLA forces are located, or maybe sometime it can attack the SPLA forces from the direction where the UNMIS is located, so that it creates, you know, that kind of confusion. In totality, the SPLA did not attack UNMIS facility in Southern Leech State.
The UN says any attack on UN bases or humanitarian operations could amount to a war crime. UN Security Council Resolution 2327, which was adopted last year, regards the ongoing insecurity across South Sudan as a threat to international peace and security in the East Africa region. Under Chapter 7 of the UN Charter, UNMIS is mandated to use all appropriate measures, including force to deter actions that undermine the peace, stability and security in South Sudan.
The SRSG strongly condemns this callous attack, which was carried out with a complete disregard for the lives of civilians, as well as UN and humanitarian workers. He appeals to all parties to the conflict to respect the sanctity of UN premises.
Chapter 19 of the UN Security Council resolution states that all parties of the conflict must respect the sacredness of UN premises and emphasizes that any attacks on and threats made to UNMISS personnel and United Nations facilities may constitute war crimes. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of a communication by Minister for Cabinet Affairs Martin Elia Lomuro dated May 2nd, responding to the latest report by the UN panel of experts on South Sudan, which cites documented cases of government troops attacking aid workers in the country. Lomuro has dismissed the report as baseless and referred to the UN panel of experts as the so-called experts. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A public opinion survey conducted in Juba by the Network for Democracy and Elections, or SUNDE, says security in South Sudan improved significantly between December 2016 and March this year, with soldiers and security agencies patrolling streets of the capital at night. As Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba, some residents say although security has improved, more needs to be done.
After the deadly fighting erupted in July in the capital, there were hundreds of reported cases of killings, robberies, rape and shootings at night. In December, the Minister of Interior and security agents intervened to secure the capital. Military authorities and police were deployed in residential areas to secure the city, collect unauthorized weapons, protect the civil population, and arrest criminals. Rajab Muhandis, executive director of SUNDE, says the majority of residents surveyed in March said there was a noticeable improvement in Juba's security situation.
Gun violence went down, night robbery reduced. Weapons were collected from civilians and unauthorized soldiers. They also said criminals were apprehended. And then they said security forces were polite and that security forces treated civilians with respect.
Muhandis says people were particularly happy about the changed behavior of security personnel patrolling at night. 23-year-old Abor Mabien Nial, who lives in the Muniki Miyasaba suburb, says since the outbreak of violence in December 2013, it was not safe to walk the streets of her neighborhood. But she says things are better now.
Security is a bit good right now because since the last 2 years, the shooting, it's always there in Monique especially. But right now, it's safe.
Now, Nial says she can walk around her neighborhood until 7 or 8 at night without fear. 30-year-old Iwena Cole lives in the Gumbo Sharikat suburb. She says now her streets are safe too, thanks to soldiers on patrol.
Now you can loiter, you can move at any time you like. The security is there. It's not like being before. People were just killed at any time.
Dukes David, a resident of Nyakuren West residential area, says he's enjoying his newfound freedom of movement.
I feel the security here is good because we stay around up to 12, sometimes 1, we watch football and we go home safely, nothing happens.
Muhandis says he also included some recommendations for the government.
The government and specifically the security institutions should build on the gains they have made and that they should sustain these gains. This intervention should be expanded adequately in Juba, but also extended to all the states.
The civil society boss says the findings of the survey will be discussed with the Inspector General of South Sudan's police force and the Chief of Central Security Division in South Sudan's National Security Service. He says both men have shown a willingness to cooperate with SUNDE. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
From Juba, we move back to Washington. The chief of mission for South Sudan at the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, is painting a grim picture of the country's economy. But as INBO reports, the IMF says a decrease in the inflation rate and a reduction in fiscal spending by the government are both positive steps towards stabilizing the country's fragile economy.
John Mickelson, the IMF mission chief for South Sudan, says the country's economic trajectory is on a downward spiral.
You may be able to argue that the situation is already in a situation where the economy has collapsed in a sense that it's unable to deliver economic growth. Actually, it's delivering a decline in economic activity. And in a country where you still have inflation, you know, at the level of 300%, and a currency that have lost 95-96% of its value over the last couple of years, that in many ways is an economy that are not performing and spiraling into a point where it's going to be very, very difficult and take some time to get it back on track again.
Mickelson says the government has implemented economic stabilization measures, such as a decrease in fiscal spending and a reduction of borrowing from the central bank. But he warns that exchange rates are still volatile and insecurity is only making matters worse.
And that does not only mean that inflation is very high and instability in the security in the exchange rate market. It also means that all the economic buffers that a country normally can draw on when they are in a crisis situation have basically been used. So there are very, very little foreign exchange reserves left in the country, and the country are unable to borrow much from overseas. Of external borrowing.
South Sudan's inflation was at 370% in January, according to the IMF. That is down from a whopping 650% 5 months earlier. Mickelson says the country needs to adjust its overall policy framework to try to lower the fiscal deficit, which will reduce the pressure on the economy. He says the declining inflation is a good sign, but there is still a lot of work ahead.
The government, the country, is basically is in war. It's a war economy. It's a government that prioritizes resources primarily towards the security sector in various forms. And of course, with these priorities, it is very difficult for the government to put in place a program and an economic policy framework that can be successful and be credible.
South Sudan Finance Minister Stephen Du Dao could not be immediately reached for comment. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan's Central Bank Board of Governors are calling for immediate restructuring of the central bank's financial management system as stipulated in the 2015 peace agreement. The governors say the country's economic growth and development depends on the reforms. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan Central Bank Governor Otto Murago Ajak says the country's economy is experiencing tremendous challenges due to internal and external shocks. Ajak says the political and economic crisis and low oil prices has forced the Bank of South Sudan to address these challenges.
In this context, the new management would like to engage in a major restructuring and reform of Bank of South Sudan and the financial sector in the country. The key aim for this endeavor is to enable the sector to play its rightful role in economic growth and development of South Sudan.
The 2015 peace agreement recommended formation of an economic and financial management authority to address the economic crisis in the country. Ajak says implementing the agreement will help solve the country's problems.
The intention of Bank of South Sudan in the next few years is therefore to clearly determine priorities and defining core objectives, maximizing resource use, optimizing performance, and setting organization and corporate culture, strengthening communication, applying international best practices, devising defined programs, implementing them, and monitoring and measuring performance, and building credibility with the public through having transparent and active systems of public accountability and external reporting.
A South Sudanese senior economist with the Ebony Center for Strategic Development says the move taken by the central bank to restructure the bank's financial system is uncertain. James Alich Garang says transparent policies will help the economy of the country.
In the short run, it's going to be modest in the sense that the economy is already in deep crisis. But over time, these reforms are going to be key in helping them deliver on their mandate. And that is on price stability and, of course, helping the government to achieve other goals like economic growth and employment opportunities.
Garang says there's need for the board of the bank to be transparent.
Central bank can reform and can even create resources at will. But because we are the country we are constrained everywhere, and has made it difficult for them even to do the simple thing like, for example, frequently communicating with the general public, clarity in their policy, and so on and so on. These are the things that the central bank does to have public buy-in and to sell their policy ideas to the general public.
South Sudan's economy collapsed because of its vast overdependence on crude oil. Last year, the Bank of South Sudan auctioned millions of pounds. The decision affected the country's crippled economy. The central bank governor says the Bank of South Sudan will focus on transparency and accountability in its monetary management. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees in Uganda weigh on the national dialogue. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what instrument would you like to learn to play?
Guitar. Because I just like the way they hold it. It's just beautiful. Like, it just looks too, like you put in so much work, probably. It just looks nice. I admire people who do that, guitar, yeah.
I want to play the fontomfrom. They are huge drums, and then the rhythm that it gives is very interesting, so I want to play that.
I would like to play adungu, because it's simple to learn. Yes, it's not like this piano where they will tell you play this formula, there's a key somewhere to also click on and all that.
Okay, I like to play the flute because I think I'm good with it and I love to hear the sound of it.
I like to learn to play the piano. It's a very interesting piece of instrument. I like when I see people playing it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese refugees at the Pagirinya camp in Uganda's Adjumani district say the much-touted national dialogue is doomed to fail unless all South Sudanese are included in the process. Some refugees say the group opposed to the government, like former First Vice President Riek Machar, must participate in the process. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Pagirinya in Adjumani district.
South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has not given any indication if he will allow the Machar-led armed opposition to take part in the national dialogue. Last month, the president reconstituted the steering committee of the process, bringing on board representatives of the former political detainees, but no one from Machar's group. Alex Wani, a refugee at the Pagirinya camp, says Machar must not be ignored because he commands a large following among South Sudanese.
Both sides, in one way or the other, they have got power and they have divided the population. Opposition taking higher percentage and their absence means nothing will work.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay told this program that armed groups are not welcomed in the national dialogue, adding that any group that wants to participate must first renounce violence. Mark Eresto, who escaped violence from the former Central Equatoria state, says the process should be open to all without any preconditions.
I think national dialogue should include everybody, being whether armed or unarmed persons, because this thing affected everybody. It doesn't exclude armed group.
George Loani, another South Sudanese staying at the Pagirinya refugee settlement, agrees.
Without the armed opposition, nothing can happen. No peace will be seen in South Sudan.
Wani says denying armed opposition groups a seat at the table would also alienate a large segment of people, particularly those sympathetic to groups excluded from the national dialogue.
The population who are in the opposition control area will not be part of it because government will definitely not reach there. Then the population who are within the government control area and their heart is not within the government will not also listen to this.
Loani says such a process cannot lead to a constructive dialogue because certain voices of the diaspora, including those like him, whose main interest is seeing a peaceful and stable South Sudan, might never be heard.
He suffocates us to also pay attention to the view of his fellow citizen outside South Sudan. What they want, their demand is peace, not conflict or not for war to continue in South Sudan, because we are tired of war.
Erasto says if the national dialogue process is going to be inclusive, the steering committee should listen to all views, including those in the diaspora.
In my opinion, it is best to have this national dialogue outside. And those who are already formed as the committees, what they call the steering committees, should be moving around. They should be splitted so that they meet all these different groups outside, those who fear the government.
President Kiir announced plans to convene the national dialogue late last year, saying it would unite South Sudanese polarized by 3.5 years of conflict. He said it would likely take place in early March. The dialogue has yet to be scheduled. Government officials say they don't have the money to sponsor the dialogue. Critics say nearly all the people appointed to lead the process are close associates of the president. Wani, Resto and Loani say this is wrong. They argue that the dialogue process can only achieve its stated goals if all government opponents are brought on board. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
From Northern Uganda, we move to South Africa, where South Africa's National Congress Party pushed back today on a high court ruling that President Zuma must explain his rationale for firing a popular finance minister in March. It's latest sign of pressure on Zuma ahead of a no-confidence vote in parliament. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
President Jacob Zuma has 5 days to explain himself to a court, and by extension, to his country, for his widely unpopular decision to fire a well-respected finance minister and reshuffle his cabinet in March. It's the latest twist in an ongoing political drama that has besieged the increasingly unpopular president. Tens of thousands of people have recently held marches demanding his resignation. Earlier this week, the president was booed off the stage at a political rally held for union workers. On Thursday, a high court approved an opposition party demand that Zuma provide records to explain why he fired Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan as part of the controversial reshuffle that prompted widespread outrage and caused a major ratings agency to downgrade the nation's sovereign credit rating. Zuma's ruling ANC panned the ruling as unfettered encroachment of the judiciary into the realm of the executive. The Opposition Democratic Alliance, which has filed numerous court cases against Zuma, hailed it as a victory, not only for the DA, but for all South Africans who deserve to know on what basis the president made this disastrous decision. Politics professor Daryl Glazer of the University of Witwatersrand says this is a strange moment for South African politics.
We're in a kind of exceptional circumstance where the judiciary is having to, as it were, put out fires and pick up pieces because other parts of the state are not functioning effectively. So a lot of people will excuse or justify the court's role in that way. But I don't think it's ideal that the court should be extending itself too far into the domain of other branches of government. I think, however, on the whole, its interventions in relation to Zuma have been healthy for our constitutional democracy. So it's a difficult call.
South Africa's constitution permits the president to make changes to his cabinet, but also stipulates that decisions should be fair and reasonable. That's why this case got to court. Initially, Zuma and his allies said they fired the minister because of a widely discredited intelligence report that accused him of plotting against the president. Glaser says the court's decision could have a major impact.
What has to be decided is whether there are other elements in play, whether the executive is required to give some account of its decisions, but then does that mean it has to account for all of its decisions, not only this one, but if one's to be impartial about it, all decisions in the future, because you wouldn't want to give the impression that the court is taking sides in a political dispute. So this such a principle would have to be impartially applied, and it would probably be quite unusual amongst the world's political leaders and to have presidents or prime ministers that have to publicly explain every cabinet reshuffle.
It's likely, legal and political pundits say, that the president will appeal the ruling and thereby avoid a courtroom confession. It's also likely, they say, that the president's drama is far from over. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. UNMISS says peacekeepers from Ghana fended off a group of armed men planning an attack on an UNMISS base in Lear County. UNMISS spokesperson Chantel Persuade says the attackers came from the direction of a nearby government-held base. The lead of UNMISS praised the quick response of the Ghanaian forces, saying an attack could have resulted in many civilian casualties. It's the first reported case of UNMISS peacekeepers deterring an attack on civilians in South Sudan. UNMISS operates under Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter, which states that 12,000 UN troops shall take action and enforce the peace where there is an imminent threat. A new survey conducted by the Network for Democracy and Elections says security in parts of the country is improving as soldiers and security agents patrolling the streets in the capital at night are doing a good job. Residents say although security has improved, more needs to be done. After the deadly fighting erupted in Juba in the capital, there were hundreds of reported cases of killings, robberies, rape, and shootings at night. In December, the Ministry of Interior and security agents intervened to secure the capital. Military authorities and police were deployed in residential areas to secure the city, collect unauthorized guns, protect the civilian population, and apprehend criminals. And finally, the chief of mission for South Sudan at the International Monetary Fund is painting a grim picture of the country's economy. The IMF says a decrease in the inflation rate and the reduction in fiscal spending by the government are both positive steps towards stabilizing the country's fragile economy. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We'll leave you with the song You Are One in a Million by Justin Simpleman. We have been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You Are One in a Million. I am John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you sharing your evening with us. Have a safe weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.